Sri Chaitanamanovistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Drati Svapadantikam He Krishna Karanasindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatate Gopesha Gopikakam Tarara Gantanamoshtide Tata Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vishtavanu Sute Devi Anamami Hari Priye Sri Krishna Chaitana Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Hare. So reading tonight from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, translations and purports by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, 12th chapter, text number 20. Yay!
Do!
Dharmamritam!
Dharmamritam!
Idam!
Idam!
Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Those who follow this imperishable path of devotional service and who completely engage themselves with faith, making me the supreme goal, are very, very dear to me. We can repeat that. Those who follow this imperishable path,
of devotional service,
and who completely engage themselves with faith,
and who completely engage themselves with faith,
making me the supreme goal,
making me the supreme goal,
are very, very dear to me.
Are very, very dear to me.
Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In this chapter, from verse 2 through the end, from Maya Avesya, Mano Ye Mam, fixing the mind on me, through Ye Tu Dharmam Ritam Idam, this religion of eternal engagement. The Supreme Lord has explained the process of transcendental service for approaching Him. Such processes are very dear to the Lord, and He accepts a person engaged in them. The question of who is better, one who is engaged in the path of impersonal Brahman, or one who is engaged in the personal service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was raised by Arjuna, and the Lord replied to him, so explicitly that there is no doubt that devotional service to the Personality of Godhead is the best of all processes of spiritual realization. In other words, in this chapter it is decided that through good association one develops attachment for pure devotional service and thereby accepts a bona fide spiritual master and from him begins to hear and chant and observe the regulative principles of devotional service with faith, attachment, and devotion, and thus becomes engaged in the transcendental service of the Lord. This path is recommended in this chapter. Therefore, there is no doubt that devotional service is the only absolute path for self-realization, for the attainment of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The impersonal conception of the Supreme Absolute Truth, as described in this chapter, is recommended only up to the time one surrenders himself for self-realization. In other words, as long as one does not have the chance to associate with a pure devotee, the impersonal conception may be beneficial. In the impersonal conception of the Absolute Truth, one works without fruitive result, meditates and cultivates knowledge to understand spirit and matter. This is necessary as long as one is not in the association of a pure devotee. Fortunately, if one develops directly a desire to engage in Krishna consciousness in pure devotional service, he does not need to undergo step-by-step improvements in spiritual realization. Devotional service, as described in the middle six chapters of Bhagavad Gita, is more congenial. One need not bother about materials to keep body and soul together, because by the grace of the Lord, everything is carried out automatically. In this chapter, the Lord is explaining what pleases Him. The purpose of life is to please the Supreme Lord. The purpose of life is to be happy. The purpose of life is to please someone, because that's how we become happy. When we are children, we try to please our parents. When we get a little older, we try to please our friends. When we get a little older, we try to please our teacher. We try to please the person we're working for. Or we try to please our public. We try to please our dearest friends. But life is based on pleasing others, because if we can't please others, then we cannot be happy. That's from the material point of view, strictly from the material point of view. Everybody is trying to do this, trying to find some person to please. In the last few hundreds of years, there's been so much literature written about romance, such that almost everybody, especially today, we see is indoctrinated to think that the highest purpose in life is just to find the perfect mate of the opposite sex. Then all problems will be solved and everything will be perfectly happy ever after, as they say. And they lived happily ever after, they say that. This indicates that people are unknowingly aspiring after immortality. They lived happily ever after, was the line in the fairy tales we learned as children. And they lived happily ever after. That means that humanity is actually immortal, but we don't know it, or we forget it. But we want to live forever. Therefore, Yamaraj, who is the Lord of Death, quizzed Yudhisthira Maharaj, what is the most strange and wonderful thing? And when he answered that the most strange and wonderful thing is that we all know we have to die, but when the time comes to die, we think, "Not, I wasn't prepared. I want to go back and try to do it again, differently." Even though all his life he saw his friends die, he saw his mother and father, grandparents, and so many people die, but he thought that somehow or other it won't happen to me. Now, this is an indication that human beings are immortal. They have an eternal nature. They are Satchidananda Vigraha. Everyone has this quality. So this is a little negative that we forget, but the positive side is that we don't ever really forget, because we can't imagine. No one can think of what the death experience is like. And many people now, in this day, they believe, even Christians, nominal Christians, and Jews, and Protestants, they believe almost maybe one in four people, they think that there's reincarnation. They believe it. Because nobody wants to die. And everyone wants to be happy. There was one famous American novelist, William Saroyan. He was very famous. He wrote a book called The Human Comedy. So when he died, just before he died, he knew he was going to die. He made a public statement. He said, "I've always known I was going to die. But when I realized it was actually happening to me, I lost all of my understanding. And now I'm very frightened. I don't know what's going to happen." So another strange thing is that people know they're going to die, but they make no preparation. Or maybe they think somehow I'll be reborn. But because they don't know, they're very frightened. So once Prabhupada was asked, what's the purpose of life? I was there in London. Some radio man came to ask me. He said, "The purpose of life is to enjoy." So this man was very surprised. Here's this a guru from India, this great renunciant mendicant. And he says, "What's the purpose of life? To enjoy?" Because anyone would answer like that, wouldn't they? I mean, that's what the big capitalists and the big materialists will say. Ah, be happy. Enjoy life. That's why we have to get more oil from the earth. The chairman of one of the big oil companies, I think it was Argo, he was talking about, well, there's going to be more oil. There has to be for at least 30, 40 more years there will be oil. Because we have to enjoy life. That's the purpose. So Prabhupada said that. And then he went on to say, though, but we are trying to enjoy in the wrong way. We want to enjoy, but we're just trying to enjoy the wrong things. That's all. And if we just knew what the right thing was to enjoy, if we only knew how to enjoy and what to enjoy, then we'd be completely happy. There wouldn't be any unhappiness. Any intelligent person can understand. German people are said to be very intelligent. At least Prabhupada always used to say that. He always said the German people are most intelligent, outside of India, that is, he said. So intelligent means to understand that with happiness comes unhappiness, and that's not normal. So people, they have a kind of... I noticed when I first started to come to Germany that people here, they were a little bit, compared to other places I lived and visited, they were a little sad. And they had a kind of pessimistic outlook on life. A little, what do we call it? Pessimistic, you know, kind of cynical. Yeah, well, you know, it's okay, but it's not okay like that. So that's actually a sign of intelligence, because one who can understand that there is something imperfect going on, and he's not quite satisfied, that's intelligence. He's trying to adjust. He knows he has to die. He knows if he goes out and gets drunk, he's going to get a hangover. A woman knows if she's going to have a child, she's going to have pain in childbirth. A person goes out to enjoy, there's going to be some reaction. He knows. So that's intelligence. And if he's really intelligent, he tries to make some kind of adjustment to how can I deal with this fact that there's happiness and unhappiness together in one life. He has a sense that it's not normal. So what is normal, and what makes a person happy? Especially as people grow older, they want to please their children, they want to please their wife or husband, they want to please their friends, they have parties, and they want to be the center of life at the party. Or they'll go to the party and they want to enjoy with their friends. So Krishna is claiming, he's making another claim, Suhridam Sarvabhutanam, that I'm the friend of all living entities, the dearest friend. Once Prabhupada said, if he just knows that, and that Krishna is the supreme proprietor, right, and the supreme enjoyer, if he knows those three things, then he'll never be unhappy. He'll always be, at least he'll always be peaceful, as Krishna says, Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. Vokdanam Jagatapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram Suridam Sarvabhutanam. So Krishna claims to be the friend of all living entities. And what kind of a friend is Krishna? Krishna is the kind of friend that travels with his friend everywhere as Paramatma. Now, in the material world, we may have friends we see sometimes. And sometimes the friends in the material world are compared to sticks of straw on the vast ocean or in a great river or lake. By some apparent chance, they'll touch each other and then they'll separate, never to come together again. So this is the nature of, it's said, friendship in the material world. But Krishna's friendship is different as Paramatma and Suridam Sarvabhutanam. He's going everywhere because he's situated within the heart of the living being. He never leaves. Just sometimes we're walking along and we see the sun or the moon seems to be following us everywhere. Wherever we go, we can't escape. And that's actually Krishna. The sun and moon are the eyes of Krishna. So Krishna is in the heart. Just like the heart is never separate from the body, Krishna is moving with us everywhere. So our friends may not want to go with us someplace, but Krishna goes everywhere, no matter what. It may be in a filthy place, it may be in a very beautiful, happy, serene, quiet forest place, it may be very peaceful, it may be very beautiful, or it may be very unpleasant. But nevertheless, Krishna goes. That's the kind of friend Krishna is. He's going and giving some intelligence. So what does he say here? He says that one who engages in devotional service is very dear to me. He says very, very. Twice. Very, very dear to me. And in the ativa, it's a very powerful word in Sanskrit. Ativa means very, very. Not just one very, but very. In the previous verses he says just one very. Very dear to me. Uses the word priya. Priya means dear. One who is dear to Krishna. He becomes dear to me. Or sometimes priya means very dear. Anyone who engages, who treats others nicely, he is very dear to me. Someone who is equal in distress and happiness, he is very dear to me. Someone who is free from the dualities, he's silent, he doesn't care for residence, he's fixed in knowledge, he's equal to friends and enemies, equipoise in honor and dishonor, heat and cold, happiness and distress, fame and infamy, always free from contaminating association, satisfied with anything, he is very dear to me. But the purport in the end of the chapter is that one who follows devotional service completely engages himself with faith, making me the supreme goal. Such person is very, very dear. So this is what pleases Krishna. This is another way for him to say that you should surrender unto me. Because we may try to please Krishna in so many ways, but what really pleases Krishna is if we surrender unto him. And one of the ways that surrender is expressed is that we don't want anything different from what Krishna wants. There are six symptoms of surrender described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. One is to always try to take the opportunity and serve Krishna by accepting things that are favorable for Krishna consciousness. One who is a transcendentalist begins to see how everything and everyone can be engaged in the service of Krishna. We were discussing that this morning. This is the principle of Yuktam Vairagya. He's a great Prabhupada used to say that we devotees were the greatest opportunists. We look for opportunities to spread Krishna consciousness. Whether the situation is good in the material world or bad in the material world, we take the opportunity. We've seen that in times when the material situation is very bad, like we can say, for example, in Russia, where the economy is falling apart, the social structure is becoming unraveled, the political system is quite corrupt. You have to bribe 10 people to do one simple thing instead of 3 like you do in India. It's much worse. The devotees are taking great advantage because people are becoming intelligent to understand that politically, socially, and economically they cannot succeed. So this is a great, great advantage for spreading Krishna consciousness. And we see it's practical. Devotees take advantage of that situation. And in countries where they're very materially affluent, like this country or America or Sweden, Canada, Japan, devotees are also utilizing so many nice facilities. They're getting the latest computers and they're spreading Krishna consciousness by disseminating very nice, making books, spreading the Krishna consciousness through all this technology very nicely, getting all the computer networks. So whether the situation is good or bad, an expert devotee is taking advantage of the situation. In business also, we know that there's the shares, the stock market. One who's an expert trader, it doesn't matter whether the stock market is crashing or it's going up. He's always making a profit because he knows just when to buy and when to sell. He's very expert. So spiritually, a devotee is very expert. He knows how to use everything for Krishna, good or bad. So he accepts things favorable, what we call favorable to Krishna consciousness. Then secondly, he rejects everything that's unfavorable to Krishna consciousness. This is the next principle. If association is not good, then he rejects it. He rejects the association of very greedy people, people who are greedy for mundane achievements. He doesn't accept that. He doesn't like it. He doesn't want to be around someone who is simply trying to advance on the material platform. He's not happy with that. So he rejects. He knows when not to become intimate with someone who is very materialistic. As soon as he sees that a person's only desire is to advance materially, Janmaishwarya Shuta Shivir, he wants a better birth, he wants to increase the nobility of his birth, he wants to become very opulent, or he wants to be very beautiful, or he wants to be very educated. These are the paths of material progress. And if that's there without Krishna, then he rejects. Anyone who wants to become very powerful and great, he rejects. Next, he wants to feel always dependent on the Lord's mercy. He doesn't want to do anything unless Krishna gives it. It's like it said, man proposes, God disposes. We may want so many things, but ultimately Krishna has to decide. So he has the sense that if Krishna doesn't want it to happen, I'll accept that. Then he always feels protected by Krishna. He knows that wherever I go, Krishna is going to protect me. I may have to go out into the most dangerous place, but Krishna will protect me. As we were speaking this morning, the world is very, very dangerous. But a devotee feels always protected. He doesn't feel fearful, even in the most fearful condition of life. Therefore, when Prahlad Maharaj was taking shelter of Krishna, even though he was put in situations that he should die at any moment, he never felt fearful. So this is the meaning of feeling protected. Even though he was falling through the air, falling off a cliff, he wasn't fearful. This is complete faith in Krishna. When Krishna says here, those who completely engage themselves with faith, that complete faith means that he always feels protected by the Lord. He will never be frightened because he knows Krishna will protect him. I remember in San Francisco, one devotee was a new devotee, Jivananda. He was just initiated by Prabhupada. And he was near the temple. There were some very mean and nasty people there. So this man grabbed him. He was a very fierce-looking, big fellow. And this Jivananda is a very small, little skinny boy. And he grabbed him. And he said, I'm going to beat you. So he was so frightened, he didn't know what to do. So he thought if he just scared him, if he hit him back all of a sudden, and then he would run away, and the man would be startled. So he hit him, and he didn't move. He just said, why did you do that? Because he was so strong. And then he realized that he wasn't going to get away. So he just began to scream at the top of his lungs, Nisringadeva, Nisringadeva, like this, screaming. And he said all the houses nearby, the windows were flung open, and everybody started to look. And this man started to look around, and he saw everybody was looking at him. So he immediately threw him against the wall, and he ran away. He was very frightened that everyone would see him, he would get arrested like that. So that's protection. He knew somehow that if nothing else, Krishna would protect him. And we saw that with Gajendra also. Remember when Gajendra was in that great fight with the alligator? He felt he had no other recourse. He was helpless, just helpless. And Draupadi also, when she raised her hands, because the Kauravas were disrobing her, tearing her sari, tearing everything up, she was praying and praying. And then finally, she raised both hands. She was raising her hands to Krishna. You know when they had that surrender in the war? This is a surrender, the soldiers, the enemy soldiers. So that was her gesture of surrender. And at that time, just at that time, when she surrendered and gave up trying to protect herself, thinking, Krishna, please protect me, then he gave her unlimited clothing so she couldn't be denuded by these Kauravas. So that's feeling protected. The fifth symptom is not to have any desire other than Krishna's desire. Krishna has a desire for all the living entities. He's telling what it is to surrender to him. And at the end of Bhagavad Gita, he says, Yaidam paramam guyam, you know that, mad bhakti shavidashati, bhakti maya param vidvam, mame vaishat samshayaha. The one who engages in spreading this teaching or widening the circle of Krishna consciousness and giving it to others, that person is very dear. He uses the same words, very dear. For one who explains the supreme secret to the devotees, pure devotional service is guaranteed, and at the end he will come back to me. And the next verse he says, there is no servant in this world more dear to me than he, nor will there ever be one more dear. Nachatasma manusheshu. Kashchin me priyakritama. Priya means dear, and Kashchit me priyakritama means there will nowhere be anyone as dear to me as that person. Never. Bhavita na cha me. Tasman. He's making it very clear. Bhavita na che me tasman anya priyataro bhuvi. In this world. Bhuvi means this world. No one can be more dear. So this is Krishna's desire. He wants his knowledge. He wants his teachings. He wants the knowledge that you can get out of this material world. He wants the techniques by which you can get out of this material world, made known to everyone. Because in this way, he's beckoning all the conditioned souls. Please come back. Please come back. How to come back? I'm giving you my servants. I'm giving you my teachings. I'm giving you myself. And so many different incarnations are coming. I'm coming as my original form. I'm coming as Nityananda. So he's trying in every possible way to induce the conditioned soul because he's so forgetful. Krishna's trying so many different ways. Even though we have our stubborn free will, we want to be the slaves of the Maya. We think we're free, but Krishna is trying. So he says that anyone who does this thing, this is what makes them more dear to me than anyone else in this world. That will please me more than anything else. If you'll just try to bring some more conditioned souls back. If you try to do that, then you will please me more than anyone else, more than anything else that anyone can do. So Krishna's saying, this is the symptom. And the sixth symptom of surrender, that one means we have no desire different from Krishna's. We shouldn't want anything else other than that. Nothing will make me happy unless I can be engaged in the service of spreading Krishna's message. And the sixth symptom is to very humbly and very meekly go about in this material world. And that's kind of a secret too, because if we maintain this demeanor of very humble living and very simple and very meek, then it will be possible to spread Krishna's word, because people will listen. That's possible. Today everybody is very proud. It is said that the pauper is proud of his penny. Every race, every nationality, every family is very, very proud. Very proud. You notice when sometimes you cross the border and the border guards are there, want to see your passport, they're very proud. That they're, whatever they are, they're very proud. Sometimes they make it very difficult. In one of Prabhupada's books, he writes about the customs agents. He says, this was an easy journey to other planet, the original manuscript. Prabhupada said, and when you go through the immigration, they're just like barking dogs. Woof, woof, woof. Why have you come here? Just like the dog. He's proud of his territory, so he barks. So I was carrying this manuscript once, and I was arrived in Holland. And they stopped and started asking me a lot of questions. And then he said, what is this? And I said, it's a book. It's a manuscript. So he said, let me see that book. And he opened it. And the very page he opened it up to was that page. Woof, woof. Why have you come here? Why have you come here? He closed it back up. He said, all right, you can go. So everybody is very proud. And we don't like to deal with proud people. You know, arrogant people. We don't want to deal with them. So devotees become very dear to others because they're very humble, they're very meek. And people love this quality very much. It's possible to preach. It's been said that we should wear the third verse of the Shikshastakam on our neck like a garland. Pinadapi sinichena tororeva sishtam. Manira manira na kirtane sadakari. It's just like a decoration. If we're humble, that's like the decoration of the Vaishnava. Always offer respect to others. When we were leaving England, they made us go through the search, you know, through the security, and they went through every little thing, so many things, 15 minutes to go through our bags. But we were very early, so we were just in a good nature, a good frame of mind, making jokes. And many people were standing, watching. So finally when he finished, I said, so now we are certified good boys. And he thought that was very funny. He laughed. Because it's a very thankless job, you know, you have to go through everybody's suitcase and then look inside the wallet and then take the pen apart and look inside the shaving cream spray, and it takes so long. But because he saw that we weren't proud, we weren't angry, he smiled, he was very, you know, pleased. The situation's very good. So one who is preaching, if he's very Trinadapi Sunichenato Revasishma, if he's very humble, everyone will like him and they will accept his preaching. Whatever he says, they'll listen. So this is another one of the symptoms of surrender. So this is these are some of the things that happen in devotional service. We develop some of these qualities. Sarvaya gunas tatra samasate sura. It is said that when one engages in devotional service, yasatma buddhi or yasatma bhakti, one engages in bhakti, then he develops these good qualities. And if he doesn't engage in devotional service, Arava Bhaktasya Kuto Mahaguna, then he engages in the external service of the Lord. So as Prabhupada is mentioning, these middle six chapters tell us how to engage in devotional service. They explain what the symptoms are, what we should look for, the qualities of a devotee. And then if we become completely devoted to Krishna, not just giving up our fruits of our work or our mind or our time or activities, but fully engaged in devotional service, mind, intelligence, body, words, and all actions, that is proof. Because there has to be an exchange of love, the dati pradiganati guyamakatu prichati. If we love somebody, we have to do something for that person. We can't please somebody without doing something for them. That's proof of our love. So this is what pleases Krishna. The proof is to do what he wants to do, to offer him things, to offer him devotees, to offer him, even if it's patram pushpam palam, only those things. He's very, very happy. And if we offer him what he wants, his service to be spread, he's also very, very happy. He's happiest. And of course, we can't do that. We can't spread Krishna consciousness unless we're also patram pushpam palam toyam, unless we're worshipping Krishna's deity and getting purified. Because unless we're purified ourselves, how can we make others purified? Because everyone is watching our example. That's the meaning of acharya. If by example we're pure, then everyone will want to be pure. If by example we're humble, then everyone will want to be humble. If by example we're devoted and dedicated, then everyone will want to be devoted and dedicated. And if by example we're constantly offering the deity of Krishna so many things, the fan, the lamp, the handkerchief, the prasadam, then everyone else will want to do it. In their own home, they'll want to do it. So this is the meaning of devotional service. It's completely satisfying. When you engage in devotional service, you know there's nothing more that you want to do. There's nothing more you need to do. There's nothing to aspire for. You don't need a bigger house, a better car, a better family, better children, a better education, better clothes. You don't need it. You don't want it. Once Prabhupada was in India and giving a lecture in Bombay, and somebody kind of sarcastically asked him, what about all these Americans and Europeans? You mean to tell us that they don't do anything? They don't eat meat, they don't gamble, they don't have illicit sex, they don't take any intoxication? Prabhupada said, yes, yes. None of them. Prabhupada said, no, they don't. And those are all sitting on the stage, you know, feeling. And then he said, but they must go to movies. Because in Bombay, people love to go to movies. So he couldn't believe that at least they didn't go to movies. That much he wouldn't believe. He'd believe they wouldn't take intoxication, they wouldn't have illicit sex, they wouldn't gamble, they wouldn't take meat, but they must go to movies. He didn't believe that they wouldn't go to movies. So Prabhupada said, they hate movies. They actually hate movies. You don't believe that, but they hate movies. They don't want to go to movies. They don't like movies. They're not even attracted to them because they hate them. And he was very shocked. But that's the fact, because we understand as soon as we get a little taste for devotional service, then we just don't have any material desires. We just go away. We don't want to eat ice cream anymore. We don't care. I mean, if it comes, it's prasadam, we'll take it. But we don't have that desire. It's just not there. There's no taste. So this is param drishtva. When we make Krishna happy, we make ourselves happy. There's that nice verse in the 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam when Prahlad is teaching. And the example is given that if you dress the deity and you see how beautiful he is, then you'll be completely satisfied. Because you will behold the most beautiful form in the world. And the example is that when you're looking in the mirror, you can see your face. When you're just, you know, ladies are decorating their face sometimes, they don't see it, but when you look in the mirror, then you see the reality of this material thing. So the example is that when you see Krishna as beautiful, then you really see your own self, because you see that you are eternally connected with Krishna. And then and only then can you become really satisfied. You can look in the mirror and do so many things. You can put your tilak this way and that way. And it's nice because it's service to Krishna. But when you see your work resulting in the beautiful dress of Krishna, the beautiful form of Krishna, and that Krishna is pleased, then there's nothing that satisfies you more. There's nothing that makes you more beautiful or happy than to see that Krishna is pleased. Just to see Krishna smile. A pure devotee, a Mahabhagavata, he will faint in ecstasy. He will completely lose his consciousness. He'll become so, it's not just happiness. It's more than just happiness. It's ecstatic bliss. When he comes to these higher stages of realization, just to see Krishna smile, he loses his composure. So we want to make Krishna happy. If we do service to Krishna, we do the best service to ourselves. That's the purport of that verse. We serve Krishna nicely, then we become eternally happy. If we try to serve ourselves, then we will never be happy. That's the simple truth of devotional service. Everything is service, but devotional service is the only thing that will please us.
Because it pleases the Supreme Lord.
Sam Siddhi Haritoshanam. One acts to please Krishna, he becomes pleased. And of course we understand that by pleasing Krishna's representative, which makes things a little bit easier, we can please Krishna. We always used to try to make Prabhupada smile or see that he was happy, and then we knew Krishna was happy. So Krishna's so merciful, Suridam Sarva Bhutanam, that he sends his servants to go find us wherever we are and bring us back. I'll stop there. Have any questions or comments? Those who aspire?
Those who spread.
Spread.
They are very dear to Lord. And most of us have been brought by someone else to the movement. So how are these to be how shall we see these persons and how shall we deal with them?
They are our gurus. They are Brahma Pradarshika or Partha Pradarshika Gurus. Partha Pradarshika means the person who put us on the path to Krishna consciousness. So we see them like that. That was Dhruva Maharaja's mother. You remember the story. She asked him, go to the forest. The mother was telling her son, go to the forest. What mother would tell her son to go to the forest? But when he was going back to Godhead, he would not go without his mother. He refused to go without his mother because she put him on the path that made him Krishna conscious. And even though it was the forest, he was so grateful. In the material world, there's no gratitude. So we can never thank someone like that enough. How can I give enough thanks if someone led me to Krishna consciousness? If we thank that person, then that person will also feel very happy. And that person will be also become more Krishna conscious by our thanking. Because then if we thank such persons many different ways and try to serve them, and try to make nice arrangements for them, then they will understand how important it was that they brought me to Krishna consciousness. They'll understand it's the most important thing maybe they ever did for anybody. It makes them feel very happy. A Vaishnava feels very happy if somebody thanks him. Even though he thinks, oh, I didn't do anything, I just was doing my job. But if you thank such a devotee, you will feel very, very happy. Very happy. Because just to be appreciated by another Vaishnava, this is the highest benediction you can get. Because Vaishnavas, they're like touchstones. Panchakalpatrugasya. They're like desire trees, actually. They actually are desire trees. We're not just, sometimes we say this and we forget what it means. Panchakalpatrugasya. Kripa sindhivyevacha. Titaram bhavaneva. We say it every day, but it really means that a Vaishnava is a touchstone. If he gives you nice words, That is the greatest benediction. Is there anything that can make you more happy than hearing nice words from a fellow Vaishnava? Oh Prabhu, you did this, you really did this very nicely. A sincere appreciation. We don't need to have a promotion and get a big salary and get honored in front of a large assembly of people. We just need to hear the kind words of a Vaishnava, and then we become very, very happy. We don't need anything else. Right? Understand English? You think that's right? Go ahead. First path you should follow is that Krishna is your master. That's the first point. Because in this material world, we are all very proud of ourselves. And we don't want to take anybody else as being superior. You're from Bengal?
Yeah.
You know how, huh?
Yeah, very near from
Mayapur. You know how sometimes people in Bengal, they're very argumentative. They don't want to give anybody, you're right and I'm wrong, like that. But everybody's like that. So we're like that. We don't want to say, okay, whatever you say, it's right. So the first practice we engage in devotional service is to worship in Krishna in this way, as dasya. I'm your servant, Gopi Bhargava, Padakamala Manadasa, Anadasa, Anadasa. He says, Jivara Swarupo Nityera Krishna Das, Nityera Tatashta Shakti. That I just want to be your servant. Let me serve you. And as soon as I realize that Krishna is the master and I'm the servant, then I become peaceful. Then I don't have to argue. As long as I know that somebody, somewhere, is the supreme master, that no one will ever be greater than, or equal to him, then I can be peaceful. At least I know that I'm serving the supreme master, because I have to serve someone. And then I can serve his servants, and serve his servants, and serve his servants. So when we worship Gaur Nitai, we dress them very nicely. We offer them our food. We make obeisances. And Krishna says that we should do these things. We should offer our respects. We should offer our homage, our obeisances. We should make offerings to Krishna. This is Krishna's four-point program. So we worship him in this opulent form. We dress him in very beautiful clothes so we can remember that he is always the master. And in all the temples, we do the same thing. We offer arti, we do puja to Krishna. And every morning we get up very early and we have kirtan. We sing for Krishna very nice. We want to sing the most beautiful songs we can sing. Not for ourselves. We learn to play the mridanga for Krishna. We learn to sing for Krishna. We just want to see that Krishna is pleased, that he's happy. So if we enter into that mood, that's dasya ras first, and always try to worship Krishna in veneration, like the gopis in Krishna. We see them as Lakshmi Narayan in a very opulent form. Because by seeing him in the opulent form, we can become very submissive and humble. So there's the reason for doing this. So we always begin with dasya. And then gradually, as our devotional service progresses through more and more stages of devotion, we become more advanced, and we go through the stages coming up through Vajna Kriya and Ruchi and so on, finally come to Bhava and then Anubhava and Mahabhava, then we will find our Sita Pranala, our original Swarupa with Krishna. Maybe we may be a blade of grass under Krishna's feet, we may be Krishna's father, we may be Krishna's friend, like that. But we always start with worshipping Krishna on great awe and humility. And then gradually, our Siddha Swarup is revealed to us slowly. This is the system, the science of devotional service. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he himself, he taught this. He said, I don't have any devotion to Krishna because he came like a devotee. And all of his followers, they also came as devotees. Nityananda, Advaita. They were none other than Balaram and Mahavishnu themselves. So, you know, what does Balaram or Mahavishnu have to be to serve Krishna for? But always they were they always said, I am the servant of Krishna. I'm the servant of the gopis of Krishna. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, he said, I don't actually have love for Krishna. Prabhupada said this in a lecture. He said, I try to, but I'm just a pretender. If I really loved Krishna, I wouldn't be able to stay in this body. I would have to die immediately. So I'm just a pretender. So that was the mood he set for everyone. To just try, somehow, to try to love Krishna and be Krishna's obedient servant. Then we'll be successful. So even the great acharyas and the Panchatattva themselves, they taught us like this. To always think ourselves a servant of Krishna. Even Lord Chaitanya, he would say, to Advaita, he would say to Nityananda, you are Mahavishnu, you are Balaram, you're my older brother, I have to take orders from you. And they would always insist, no, I am your servant. Always your servant. They would never allow Lord Chaitanya to think that they wanted anything else but servitorship. This is a very long and difficult topic. It could spend hours. There's even some research being done in the GBC to say. So I want to go into an exhaustive explanation because there's many different kind of theories. But one thing you can know that Prabhupada said, I asked him also this question once. And he said that, of course, the original cause, we understand, is out of envy. The original cause why we leave the spiritual environment. Because we want to be Krishna instead of serving Krishna. So one thing Prabhupada said to that is that once we come to this material world, we should think how to get out of this material world, not how I got in this material world. That was his answer to me. He said, if you get shot by an arrow, first thing you do is take it out. That you must do. You may not ever know where it came from, but you have to take it out. So indication was, we may not know exactly how or when or why exactly we came into this material world. But we did, and we're here. And at some point we lost our Krishna consciousness. So we should try to go back, use every method available to go back to the spiritual world. Of course, Krishna says when we go back, we will never return. Janma karma chamidivyam. Again, he says. So we take it to mean that we were Krishna conscious or in the association with Krishna, somehow we've come to this material world, and if we can go back, then we'll never fall down again. It's also understood and mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam by Prabhupada that when one becomes fully liberated soul, one remembers all one's past lives. He gave the example of Narada Muni. So if you remember all your past lives, you won't want to make the mistake again of coming back to this material world. So we have confidence that we go back to this material world, we'll never have to come back again. At least that much confidence we have to have. Yes?
Offering food, should we think about how Krishna enjoys it? Should we think about the spiritual master who offers it further on to Krishna?
We can do both. First of all, if we're offering, make an offering to the spiritual master, we have his picture on the altar. We try to please him, and he also makes the offering to Krishna. But because Krishna is also being pleased by that offering, we can understand how Krishna is being pleased also. Because the spiritual master is actually the transparent via medium to Krishna. So if he's pleased, Krishna is pleased. And if Krishna is pleased, he is also pleased. So we can think both. We can pray to Krishna directly, and we can also pray through the spiritual master. And we can offer in the same way. And both are pleased. Because the purpose is to be transparent.
The other question, what about hearing music that's done by non-devotees, actually by Mayavadis, but with texts that are Krishna conscious of, only worshipping Krishna, Govinda, the text that they sing, but actually the musicians are non-devotees.
Yeah.
So is this...
we have to be careful because as Prabhupada's says, and it's stated in the Shastras that in the Puranas, that milk it becomes polluted if it's touched by the mouth of a serpent. So even some devotional songs, if they're not being done with devotion, then they can have a bad effect. There was one devotee, one of Prabhupada's advanced devotees, was sitting with Prabhupada. They were on an airplane. And it was an Air India airplane. And the Air India airplanes, this is before your time, you may not remember, but they used to have on the wallpaper, they used to have a picture of Krishna sitting on a tree branch with the gopis close. And another one, they had a picture of him holding Govardhan Hill like this. That was all the pictures on the wall of the Air India 747s. Just pictures of Krishna, either holding Govardhan Hill or sitting on the branch of the gopis. The whole airplane was like... Anyway, so Prabhupada was sitting there with a devotee and they were playing some Ravi Shankar music. And the devotee was listening to it. And he was going like this. And Prabhupada looked at him and he said, "That is Maya." And he said, "Yes, Prabhupada, I'm sorry." He became very grave. And then Prabhupada looked at over at him again and he smiled. He said, "But it's very nice, Maya." But nonetheless, it's Maya. So the point is that there are different types of devotional service that are described in the Madhurya Kandamani. One is that we... Ruchi. Ruchi is described that if the elements are excellent, a devotee becomes very ecstatic. If the clothes are very beautiful, if the instruments are very beautiful, if the offering is very tasty, he becomes ecstatic. But if it's not beautiful instruments and the clothing isn't so materially beautiful and the prasadam doesn't taste so good, then he doesn't get any ecstasy. It's still ruchi, but it's one lower form. The higher form of ruchi is when he just begins to hear anybody chanting, or sees anybody just any dress Krishna with devotion, and anyone who makes an offering with devotion, even though he's not a very expert cook, he becomes very ecstatic. And the same person, if he hears the very nice music and sees the beautiful clothes and the prasadam is very tasty, he becomes 10 times more ecstatic. So there's these two types. So sometimes if the elements are nicely adjusted, we feel, you know, legitimately more ecstatic, if it's a devotee. But if the person's not actually devotional, we don't get the same taste, not the same thrill. It's nice, but a devotee sees the devotion. He doesn't hear just the music. He hears the devotion coming through. He actually can distinguish. He may be a very expert singer, but he can see if it's, he can hear if it's devotional or not. Now, another aspect is that that person may be making great advancement himself by doing it, and he's gradually coming higher and higher. So that can make the devotee feel very happy to see that someone's actually advancing on the path. And if he sees, understands that this person is doing it out of devotion, not just for money or fame or for making a show or for some material reason, just for musical enjoyment, then he sees that this is very nice. He can appreciate it. And one example I can give about excellence of elements, Prabhupada once wanted the deities to have nice sweets, and it was in Delhi, and no devotees knew how to make the nice sweets. So he said, "You can go to the Bengali sweet shop and buy sweets and offer it to the Lord, and that'll be all right." Because nobody knew how to make them. But he wanted the Lord to have nice sweets, and only the people that were making these sweets in Delhi knew how to make them nicely. So then when Prabhupada explained, why is that so? Because when you offer... when you pay money to someone for something, for Krishna, the thing becomes purified. It becomes purified. So that person is actually even becoming purified. Just because he made the sweets and a devotee bought it from him, he was getting agyata sukriti. He was making advancement. So if a person is playing the music and singing in a mood that I want to advance in Krishna consciousness, then that we can appreciate very much. But if his mood is, I want to make beautiful music and make a fortune and please the crowds, then the devotee won't appreciate it. That's the milk touched by the lips of a serpent. He's trying to engage the holy name in his service instead of becoming the servant of the holy name. And instead of letting the holy name be my master, I'm trying to be the master of the holy name. So that is namaparad, and the devotee won't appreciate that. And the more pure we become, the more we will be able to understand the difference between someone who's singing very beautifully for their own purpose, Hare Krishna mantra or Vyasa Matinanda or whatever, and seeing someone who's actually trying to please the devotees or sing for Krishna or seem to make spiritual advancement. That's the difference. It's in the heart of the person. So Prabhupada used to say, where there's a little fire, he should fan it. If he's even just a little bit thinking, let me please the Vaishnavas. Maybe he's singing at a festival or something. Then, if there's a little spark, we should fan it. That was what Prabhupada said. If you see a little spark, fan it into a big fire. So if there's a little desire, no matter how small, to please Krishna or the Vaishnavas, or to serve in some way, the system of devotional service, then we should just make it fan into a very big blazing fire. That's our opportunity we have to take. Yes. Actually, we can think of Vrindavan anytime. Does she understand English? You understand? Yeah. You should think of Vrindavan even now. If you concentrate all your energy on hearing the mantra and pronouncing it properly, that is, you should try to do that. But you should surround yourself with pictures of Krishna and burn incense and have an altar, offer all your food. Always have things there to remind you of Krishna, because the mind will wander. And if the mind is going to wander, at least let it wander onto a picture of Krishna. Even so, I'm chanting sometimes in my ashram, I have the record or the tape or the disc playing with the mantra being chanted. I heard on Prabhupada said in one lecture that it's good to chant in the temple. Because one devotee was asking him, he said, can we just chant anywhere? It's all equal, because Krishna's everywhere. And Prabhupada said, yes, it's all equal. You can chant anywhere. But if you chant in the temple, it's 1,000 times more potent, because the spiritual atmosphere is there. So if you make your home like that, you have incense, you have sounds, you have pictures, and you can gaze at the picture of Krishna, or the deity of Krishna, while you're chanting. So then if your perfect concentration of hearing goes away, at least it can go to the deity, or it can go to the picture, or your ear can go to the sound, or the nose can go to the roses offered to Krishna, the flowers or the incense that's offered to Krishna. And you have your beads, so you're always keeping in touch with Krishna through your beads. Even to look at the books, it's very inspiring. Just to have the book open and looking at the Devanagari text, you become very inspired, because that's Krishna's words. And the books are actually deities themselves. So if you look at the deities in your house, you become very satisfied. And the devotees who chant Krishna's name in the Krishna Loka, they're saying Krishna's name and seeing Krishna are the same. When they say Krishna's name, they're seeing Krishna. Or they're feeling Krishna, they're smelling Krishna just by saying, by speaking. So we can start practicing. We try to concentrate on the sound and at the same time hear, smell, feel, see Krishna, taste Krishna in the prasad. Because that will always be there, even in the spiritual world. The residents of the spiritual world are always chanting Krishna's names. They never stop. Kirtanayak Sadakari. And that way there's no difference between separation and meeting. When Krishna disappears sometimes and they're chanting Krishna's name, it's non-different. That's why it's said in the spiritual world, every word is a song. Because every word is a glorification of Krishna. In Los Angeles, I think it was 1970, some devotees came into Prabhupada's room and they had a big kirtan. First the kirtan was in the temple, then they went to Prabhupada's room, and one of the devotees said it was a wonderful kirtan. It was a very wonderful kirtan, very wonderful, extraordinary kirtan. And he said to Prabhupada, that was a wonderful kirtan. And Bhagavan said, oh yes, did you not see Narada Muni was there? And Narnarayan said to Prabhupada, what did you say, Prabhupada? He said, didn't you not see Narada Muni and the other demigods? And he said, no. He said, what do you mean? Then Prabhupada just laughed. And he threw back his head and laughed. He said, yes. He said, he came to see all the Malechas and Chandalas chanting Hare Krishna. Another time, a devotee, you might know this, he was writing to Prabhupada. He said, I want to worship Ganesh. You know this? You heard. Anyway. And Prabhupada, he said, may I worship Ganesh? He wanted to worship. And Prabhupada said, yes. He said, you can worship Ganesh if you give me $8,000 every month. Then you can worship Ganesh. I think that was it. 8,000, was it? Was it 100? Anyway, we have it in the letters. A large, very large amount of money. If you give me $100,000 every month, then I will let you worship Ganesh. So Prabhupada didn't want. Actually, the demigods, they came during Lord Chaitanya's time, and they could be seen, but not in their original form, because they came in disguise. That's described in the Chaitanya Chaitamrita. They came in the dress of ordinary persons, but they could be seen by the devotees then. That was 500 years ago. And then now, Prabhupada said they don't care to come to this planet. There's no reason for them to come. So we have no experience of actually seeing them. Of course, even if they come, we wouldn't see them because they have different kind of bodies. Their bodies are many, and I don't know all demigods, but because their bodies are made of consciousness or the mental, mind, intelligence, and ego, so we can't necessarily see those kind of bodies unless they want us to see them. Huh? Means that one acquires all of the qualities of the demigods when one enters into devotional service. All the qualities of the demigods appear in the body of a devotee, of a Vaishnava, who's following devotional service. So in that way we can see all these qualities there. So maybe it's possible. I haven't had the experience, but those qualities and more are in the body of a devotee. All the good, great qualities, knowledge, religiousness. So much so that even the most powerful demigods, they consider devotees to be on a higher platform. So maybe the devotee will speak through the demigod instead of the demigod speaking through the devotee. It's possible. Lord Nrisimha came. The demigods were unable to speak with him. They were too frightened. So they had to push Prahlad Maharaj in front to go and pacify the Lord. Anyway, it's possible, for sure, for a devotee to have all these qualities. So it's getting a little late. Maybe stop now. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. ISKCON Vispadan ki jai.